This is a notice from the musical Times and Singing Class, issued in England on June 1, 1886. Readers of German musical papers will have noticed that during the last few months, their columns have teemed with biographical and critical notices of the composer whose name heads this article, Anton Bruckner, and who, on all sides, has been heralded by them as presenting the rare phenomenon of a man who, after the attainment of his 60th year, has suddenly burst upon the world with his 7th symphony, and wherever it has been performed, has been at once recognized as a composer of extraordinary genius and acquirements. In England, the name of Anton Bruckner, which is not to be found in any biographical musical dictionary, either French or foreign, that we have been able to consult, will probably only be familiar to a few from the fact that on the occasion of the opening of the Royal Albert Hall in 1871, he was one of the number of foreign organists who, by invitation, repaired to this country with a view of exhibiting their skill upon that newly erected organ of the Royal Albert Hall and that of the Crystal Palace. As a performance of Herr Bruckner's 7th Symphony, which has created so great a stir of late in musical Germany, is promised at a forthcoming Hans Richter concert, the name of this composer, if his symphony meets with the same reception that it has had elsewhere, will be in everyone's mouth. Friendly critics have claimed Bruckner as the natural and legitimate outcome of Beethoven and Wagner. Be this as it may, the Musical Times continues, it is certain that he came under the influence of Wagner at an early period of his career, the turning point of which seems to have been reached with the first performance of Tristan und Isolde in Munich in 1865, at which Bruckner was present. Listening to this stupendous work opened his eyes to the hitherto undreamt of possibilities in the realms of melody, harmony, technical development, and instrumentation, which Wagner had revealed. Undismayed at this, as so many would-be composers have been, and in consequence have given up composing altogether, Bruckner, on the contrary, only felt encouraged and under the conviction that a new world was open to him, set to work with redoubled energy to explore it. The first result of this was his 2nd symphony, the composition of which dates from about this period. Having made the personal acquaintance of Wagner on the occasion of that first Tristan performance, and feeling himself mysteriously drawn towards the master, on his return to Linz, Bruckner wrote to Wagner and begged him to let him have an excerpt from Die Meistersinger for performance by the Liedertafel, which Bruckner conducted. Wagner sent him the closing chorus, which was thus brought to a first hearing under Bruckner's direction long before the publication and the performance of the opera in its entirety. Bruckner's 2nd symphony was soon followed by a 3rd. This completed, his greatest desire was now to submit these two to Wagner. Accordingly, after permission had been asked and obtained, Bruckner started off for Bayreuth, taking his scores with him. This was in 1873, when Wagner was just putting the finishing touches to his Ring. Though overbusied with this and the preparations for its production in 1876, he received Bruckner in a most cordial manner, and after going through Bruckner's scores with him, and expressing both pleasure and surprise, accepted the dedication of that 3rd symphony. Wagner never forgot Bruckner. On meeting him in Vienna at the railway station in 1875, and not being able to get near him for the crush, Wagner greeted Bruckner from afar by calling out to him at the top of his voice, "Let us hear the symphony!" Spying Bruckner out at a rehearsal of The Ring at Bayreuth in the following year, Wagner exclaimed, in the hearing of many present, "My friend is here. We will perform the symphony." And only a few months before his death, Wagner encouraged him with the words, Be assured, dear Bruckner, that I myself will perform all your symphonies. Though Wagner did not live to fulfill this promise, Bruckner may still be said to be indebted to him to some extent for his friendly protection. The Musical Times in London in 1886, citing Anton Bruckner as someone whose name would soon be on everyone's lips because of his remarkable Symphony No. 7, showing him as a composer of extraordinary genius. The Musical Times also fills its readers in on Bruckner and his admiration for Richard Wagner, which he demonstrates in the slow movement of the 7th Symphony, a kind of elegy to Wagner. There was a tremendous amount of anticipation in London as the opportunity for them to experience this magnificent symphony by a composer widely proclaimed as a genius. And now, Gerardo Edelstein, music director and conductor of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, has had a chance to talk with us more specifically about why we shouldn't miss the opportunity to be in the audience for a rare performance of Symphony No. 7 by Anton Bruckner at the Community Arts Center this Tuesday evening.
It's so important for our wonderful community to get to know these fantastic works that are monumental or the essence of the 19th century. And it's a whole era of romanticism where composers express themselves in a way, in a very special way, very different from what it is today. As you know, in the 20th century, composers pretty much stopped writing, you know, pieces of the magnitude of those symphonies of the 19th century. We still have Shostakovich, we still have Prokofiev writing incredible symphonies, incredible music, but I have to say, in terms of the Romantic period, the essence of the Romantic period we can find in the big works, in the large works, that we can also find in the opera world, the very large works by Berlioz, by Wagner, later on, you know, Verdi, Puccini, not that much, but these works, they need to be heard. And when we are talking specifically about Bruckner, sometimes it's underestimated because we have the great Gustav Mahler also at the time and composing symphonies mainly, and perhaps a little more accessible. It's hard to tell. You know, Bruckner was a very reserved man, was a very religious man who lived in a small apartment, taught at a conservatory, was a great organist, was actually more famous as an organist than a symphonist, that had a great admiration for Wagner, and he wanted to bring the operatic world of Wagner into his orchestral music. And Symphony No. 7, the one we are performing in Williamsport, is one example of that.
Have you done this work before, Gerardo?
No. This is the first time ever. I had the chance to listen to it many times, to attend concerts. And the one that I performed quite a bit is the other famous one, that is Symphony No. 4. It's called The Romantic, and I performed it last year. Last year, Bruckner was kind of popular all over the world because it was his 150th birthday. So his music, you know, was resurrected everywhere, and symphonies started playing more and more, and discover this amazing composer. That's why I felt so important for me to bring it to Williamsport, and even for the musicians, not only for the audience. It's not a work that is played very frequently, again, because of the magnitude, because it's difficult, but I totally convinced that our audience will love it. This is Bruckner's most famous piece. The second movement is very well known because it's kind of written as an homage or as an elegy for Wagner, because when he finished the symphony, Wagner died. So it has so many elements from previous Romantic composers. The influence of Brahms is very notable, especially in the last movement. He becomes a little bit cyclic at the end of the symphony, bringing back themes of the previous movements. It has some folk music in it as well, especially in the scherzo, and incredibly beautiful melodies, slashing harmonies, the way he actually uses the orchestra in terms of the colors and the modulations, the conversation between the different instruments in the orchestra, and I don't want to forget the inclusion of four Wagner tubas. These are instruments that actually were created, designed by Wagner for his operas. And it's an instrument that the range is between the French horns and the trombones. So perhaps close to the euphoniums that are used in the wind ensembles. It's a very mellow, beautiful sound. They are divided in two. There are two tenor tubas and two bass tubas. And we had to rent them. So it's not an instrument that is available everywhere. So we have to find them and then rent them. And the first question is, who plays those instruments? And normally, the embouchure is the same as a French horn. So French horn players can, you know, after getting used to some of the fingerings and getting hold of the instruments for a little bit, they can play it. And our musicians, we rehearsed already, are already mastering the instrument. And I'm going to introduce them at the beginning of the concert so the audience get to know these very unique instruments.
Gerardo, did you just say mellow? Is there some sense that these instruments blend even better with the other instruments they're working with?
Yeah, so then you basically will not note the difference because they blend really well between the horns, the trombones, and the bass tuba. And actually, he used the instruments in a very choral type or organ-like sound, you know, since he was an organist. A lot of Bruckner's music, when if you close your eyes, you may feel that you are in this big cathedral, you know, listening to a majestic organ playing. So yeah, I think that will definitely mesmerize the audience, and this beauty of sound and so harmonically perfect, if I have to find a word for it.
And you mentioned he played the organ and so forth. We get a sense that he had a devotion or a spiritual nature.
Absolutely. So Bruckner was a Catholic, very religious man and an organist. And besides, you know, his symphonies, he composed a lot of liturgical music, masses and motets that choirs are performing in a regular way. So we can hear all of that combination in his music. The adoration of Wagner, the influence of some of the other symphonists in the 19th century, and, you know, we can hear all combined in his music. And Mahler actually was a big promoter of Bruckner's music, because as you can imagine, and this happened quite a bit in the 19th century, also in the 20th century, critics at the beginnings were very, very rude, and they criticized Bruckner's music for not being advanced enough or not being appealing enough. But Mahler totally disagreed and was a big promoter of his music, and of course Wagner, because they met. Wagner and Bruckner met several times, and Bruckner directly actually dedicated his Symphony No. 3, you know, just, you know, for Wagner, and then the fact that he uses the second movement as an homage to him. But we can tell the relationship between the two also was great, and the influence is palpable, you know, just pretty much from the beginning of this symphony.
You used the word monumental, Gerardo. How much bigger are your orchestral forces to bring the Bruckner fully to us?
Well, so we'll have, of course, a very large string section, and although Bruckner does not use percussion, this is also an interesting story. You know, aside from the timpani, in one edition, you know, appeared a cymbal and a triangle. in the slow movement that some people, and for one strike of a cymbal and a triangle that lasts for a couple of bars, they said it was included in the symphony at the moment he heard of Wagner's death. This is a story. We don't know exactly if it's true. Later on, Bruckner himself, because he liked to revisit his symphonies constantly, so he decided to take it out. So then some manuscripts have those included in the score and some not in the slow movement. So I made a choice of yes, including the cymbals and the triangle. And that's the only percussion we hear in Bruckner's symphonies. And then a very large wind brass section, like I mentioned earlier, with the addition of these four Wagner tubas, so the stage will be pretty full of our wonderful musicians. And it couldn't be even more contrasting what we are performing on the first half, because we are very fortunate to have B.A.O.L. Kim, pianist, performing Ravel's Piano Concerto in G. You may know, Erica, that, you know, at times I love contrast. I love to bring to our audience, you know, or surprises or things that they might not expect. And as much as I like just being consistent and performing programs that, you know, make sense artistically and musically and for the audience, I thought that we needed for this concert something that will be totally different. Different century, so this is a piano concerto, one of the most famous in the 20th century, with a composer that was a piano virtuoso and includes a lot of new techniques or a different musical language influenced by the Impressionists. And the nice thing about this concerto is that Ravel spent several months here in the United States between 1927-1928 and was mesmerized by the jazz. He went to several places just to listen to jazz music, and he loved it so much that when he went back to France, he wrote a few pieces with big jazz influence, and this is one of those. This piano concerto, you may hear some very, very interesting sections that if you don't know the concerto, you say, well, this needs to be a piece coming from a different world. and that's pretty much what it is. And the inclusion, there is a very virtuosic trumpet part. And, you know, we know trumpet is very characteristic in jazz music. And some percussion with adds a lot of colors. And the piano part is extremely virtuosic. And B.A.O.L. Kim will be the soloist. You know, she's a Steinway artist and has been in this country for many years. She studied in Seoul, a national university, but then completed her studies here, including Rice University in Texas. And now she's playing all over the country and I'm sure also abroad. And so really looking forward to working with her on this concerto. She's also winner of several competitions, including the famous Cleveland Piano Competition. And we are very, very fortunate to have her here in Williamsport playing with us.
Let me ask you about the way the concerto opens. There's that, whoosh, he gets our attention right away, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's a slapstick. Yeah, it's a slapstick, and it's as you said, it's almost like to get the attention of the audience. Here we are, and the piano starts with these arpeggios, you know, extremely, you know, fast, and some of the winds introduce the first thematic idea of the concerto. Then the second movement has this all introduction. It's like a long cadence for piano solo. That is one of the most beautiful moments of the concerto, and very intimate. It's almost like the Gynopédie by Satie, in a way, with a melody on the right hand while the left hand is playing these accompanying chords. But so sublime, so beautiful that I cannot think at the moment something better for a slow movement in a piano concerto.
And so, Gerardo, two very different works, as you've said. The Ravel concerto filled with high energy and good spirits. Bruckner, monumental, and not just filling the space at the Community Arts Center, but as Dr. Gary Burkle suggests in his program notes, and you alluded to already, it's a symphony that expands the space of the hall into the stratosphere. We feel it here in our solar plexus, and that's a different experience than we get from our mobile phones.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great comment, Erica, because first of all, there is no way to replace live music with any electronic device, even the best audio equipment. It's not the same being present, being at the concert and leaving the music that it's coming from the stage. You know, like every single thing is happening at that particular moment, and then it goes away. You cannot rewind, you cannot forward, you cannot stop. So the music is live, and you are live with the music, and it's the time when you're in your seat, and the music can transport you wherever you want. I mean, you don't have to know the technical stuff of Bruckner, the different thematic ideas and how he develops the thematic ideas, and knowing the harmonic progressions, the name of each progression or each modulation, like, you know, theorists will do, and like, you know, we also do, our conductors do at home to understand better the work, is basically sitting and listening and being able to get inspired by the music, by the performance, and whatever, you know, the music takes you, because people will feel different ways. If we can do that and not get distracted, you know, we have done our job. And, you know, not all the pieces of music have stories behind it. Music could be just very, I mean, simple in the sense, very abstract. It's music and music, and every person has the right to assimilate that and think about what they are hearing in different ways. People are going in their lives through many different things, and if you want to be sad and you want to be crying with the music, go ahead. If you want to jump in your seat and be, you know, excited and feel overwhelmed and happy and upbeat, and go ahead. You know, I could give you many examples of that sort, but I think that one purpose of playing this type of music is, you know, take it the way it is, let the music inside you and produce whatever it's good for you at that moment. And I think the music that we are playing on every concert, pretty much, we are trying to give that message to the audience, you know, and especially when there is not a particular story attached to it. You know, sometimes when that happens, then you can see one thing happening after the other. When it's pure music, that opens a whole entire world of feelings, emotions, and ideas. And again, our purpose is to inspire the audience, is to bring them the best we can, so then they can feel, you know, have a really good experience and just enjoy the moment, enjoy the music making. You'll feel absolutely rewarded and, you know, enlightened by the experience. So I hope we do that. I hope we can do that.
Gerardo Edelstein, music director and conductor of the Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, speaking with us about Marvels of Majesty this Tuesday at the Community Arts Center, 220 West 4th Street in Williamsport, February 11th at 7:30 p.m. The program will feature the dazzling piano concerto by Maurice Ravel, a piano concerto in G with celebrated pianist Bjoel Kim, and then this work, Anton Bruckner's Symphony No. 7 in E major. And one of the things that Gerardo Edelstein promised was our chance to be introduced to the Wagner tubas, the brass instrument designed by Wagner and adding a distinctive sound and richness to Symphony No. 7. So it is Marvels of Majesty this Tuesday, February 11th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Arts Center, and that's 220 West 4th Street. The Williamsport Symphony Orchestra, under the direction of Gerardo Edelstein, with guest pianist Beall Kim for the Ravel Piano Concerto in G Major. For more information, on the web, williamsportsymphony.org, williamsportsymphony.org. And for tickets, caclive.com, caclive.com.